This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today is Julian Hai, the General Manager of ReefTrek Malaysia. So ReefTrek Malaysia, which is an organization working towards sustainable management of coral reefs in Malaysia, has learned of some plans for airport extensions on islands off the east coast of Peninsular Malaysia, this time on Pulau Redang. And I'm going to find out more about these proposed plans from Julian, who's also going to share how ReefTrek have been doing this past year. And just going back to what's happening in Redang, how developments such as these can negatively impact biodiversity in the area, and also, you know, whether such projects will actually just benefit a few but have potential to harm many. So welcome, Julian. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Juliet. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, good to have you back on the show. Julian, it was about a year ago, you know, almost to the date, that we were chatting, and, you know, we were talking about what was happening over in Tioman Island. You know, you had a paper out on it being a sustainable, you know, as a sustainable tourism spot. And we had just entered the RMCO at that point. And gosh, what strange times we're living in now, going into an even stricter lockdown. How are you keeping?
Yeah, it's difficult. One of our core programs, as you know, is coral reef surveys. So we visit the islands off the east coast. We go to Sabah, Sarawak. And at the moment, we simply can't. So that core program of collecting data from around Malaysia and doing the reef monitoring it's very difficult to implement that. We managed last year. We were very fortunate. We had some very strong support from Marine Parks Section in Department of Fisheries. Mm-hmm. So they were great. They were very supportive. And my own team worked really hard. This year, we were planning to do the surveys in June. Obviously, we can't do that anymore. We're still hoping to be able to finish the program this year, but we, you know, it's difficult. And I know a lot of people are suffering. I don't want to go on too much about it, but it's difficult times for everybody, really.
Yeah, it was very disruptive, wasn't it? You know, with all the different various movement control orders. But despite all of that, you know, when there were pockets of times that you could travel, you did carry on the work that you guys were doing, right? I mean, tell me a little bit about what you guys did manage to accomplish last year.
So as well as we did do the survey program, yes. Once the first MCO lifted in, June, July, we very quickly sent out teams to do the surveys while we were still able to travel. So we got that done. But apart from that, our other island-based programs all were active. So the guys on Tioman were still doing the conservation work with the Tioman Marine Conservation Group. Mm-hmm. They were doing net removals, ghost net removals. They were doing crown and thorns clearing, education awareness programs with the community. So that all went. That was all going ahead. Similarly, in Mantanani, we actually had quite a good year last year because we got some funding for some economic recovery programs. So we started off some small scale agriculture on the island. We started off some virgin coconut oil production. We were looking at some aquaculture as well as a way to try and get money into the communities, which is not dependent upon tourism. Because yes, it was a tough year for us as an organization, but goodness, can you imagine what it was like on the islands with zero tourists for a lot of the year?
Yeah.
You know, people have gone now since January, 6 months now, with zero business. It's got to be tough out there. And we know that dive operators, resorts are having, you know, big problems with survival, basically. But yeah, we were able to carry on. We were able to do pretty much most of our programs. So we're in good shape from that perspective.
Can I just talk a little bit about the communities that are being impacted by this, right? Because yes, you know, a lot of these islands, you know, they rely a lot on tourism. And, you know, we've just had another emergency lockdown announcement, you know, with barely a few days to prepare, right? And I imagine it impacts, you know, those communities very differently from those of us living in the city. Am I right in saying that?
Well, you are. I mean, I went to the supermarket yesterday week. That was great for me.
Yep.
At the same time, my colleague informed me of a near tragic experience of some islanders in Mantanani who, you know, had to take a boat back to the mainland to get food so they could survive. But it's not the best time of year to be doing that. It's you know, it's the monsoon season. Mm. So a family, seven families, lost all of their food when their boat was returning to the island. and it capsized in big waves.
Oh my God.
I have, you know, harrowing video of people being plucked from the sea in small boats, and it's just awful. And I know we're facing difficult times, and I know the government faces some tough decisions, but sometimes I think we forget about the challenges that remote communities face. It's not just Mentanani, it's the same on Tiernan. You know, the island runs out of food. How are they supposed to feed themselves when they're not allowed to travel between states, between districts? Mm. And I'm sure there are many, you know, remote communities, not just on islands, but, you know, up in the jungles, in the forest areas, which who are facing similar problems. And it's all right for those of us who live in Klang Valley, but for the 70% of the population that doesn't, are we really meeting their needs? Are we really taking care of what they need just in order to survive day to day? It's challenging. It's very challenging.
Do we know how those that were affected, you know, when their boat was capsized, do we know how they're doing? I mean, is there need of any assistance maybe, you know, those sorts of things?
So, first of all, everybody survived. They were not very far offshore. In fact, one of the problems was that they were, you know, exiting a river mouth where the incoming tide and the outgoing tide can clash. Right. So everybody's okay. My guys on Mentanani are talking to people in the community and seeing if we can help them with some initial emergency aid just to get some food out to them in a big boat this time. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we will have to assess the situation today, tomorrow. But we'll be doing what we can.
Okay. All right. Excellent. And I guess, you know, if anyone needs to get in touch and find out more, they can always do that by reaching out to Reef Check Malaysia, right? But just going back to, you know, our discussion on the work that Reef Check has been doing, you know, despite everything, of course, as you mentioned, you managed to do your annual survey. And I think it highlighted some of your continuing concerns about, you know, the health of our reefs in some areas, right? And just out of curiosity, did less tourism from last year, did that have an impact on the health of our reefs, or is it just too early to tell?
I would love to say it did, but it's too early to tell. Interestingly, last year we were saying, well, you know, it's too early to tell. This year, you know, 12 months later, with still very little tourism, it'll be very interesting if we can get back out into the field before too long to go and have a look, because, you know, we've had another 12 months with zero tourism. So what has the impact of that been on the reefs? I'm hoping it will be positive. I'm hoping that there are some real big lessons we can learn about, you know, how a reef can recover if it's left alone, and therefore how we can deal with some of the impacts from tourism, from physical impacts, whether it's trash, pollution, and so on. So, yeah, watch this space. Very interested to see what the results are once we get the surveys done for this year.
Okay, but, you know, just looking generally, based on the annual annual surveys, what's the report card like, especially this pandemic year sort of report card looking like?
Yeah, so we've been seeing one of our key health indicators is the amount of live coral cover on a reef. Mm-hmm. And we've been seeing, unfortunately, a steady decline in that, just a little bit over the last 4 or 5 years. Last year, 2020, there was a slight uptick on the national average. So that's kind of, that's a good thing. Yeah. Now, as we always say, the averages that we use mask variation in local situations. So let's not get too excited, but at least it's a positive note, okay, if nothing else. So when we drill down and we look at individual islands and individual sites, then you can start to say, well, Tiernan Island has been seeing improvements, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Redang and Perhentian are still suffering from the impacts of Storm Pabuk, which I think was early 2019, which did a lot of damage to shallow reefs. So again, you know, when we get the surveys done this year, are we going to see that 2 years later with little tourism, will that damage have started to recover? Can we see that in the surveys? And, you know, once again, that points us in the direction of some management measures we can take. East Malaysia, we're still seeing, you know, impacts from things like fish bombing. Generally, fish populations are not very good. So, you know, it speaks to the need to increase the amount of reef in managed areas, to, you know, to try and strengthen management. And I think, going back to local communities, we are pretty sure that one of the ways we can strengthen management is to actually involve communities in management, because we have quite a top-down approach to management in Malaysia. So a lot of the work is being done by government agencies like Marine Parks in Department of Fisheries and Sabah Parks. And that's great. You know, that we have a management structure and we have a management system. But I think there's work that can be done with the local communities to strengthen that and to get the local communities involved. I was just reading something about ownership by local communities helps with protected area management. Mm-hmm. So the program we have in Tiemann, the Reef Care Program, which is a Department of Fisheries program, is showing that, you know, the local communities want to be involved.
Okay.
Showing that they can get involved and that there are things that they can do to contribute towards management. And definitely, if you are talking with local communities and it's a local community member who's suggesting ideas and saying how would things need to change, that works way better than me going to the islands and saying, oh, you need to do things differently. The locals are like, who are you? If it's like one of their own, it's a much stronger argument. So there are signs and there are things we can do to improve things. So we've got to keep on, you know, banging that drum.
And that's always been your focus, isn't it? You know, improving local participation in management and I guess also continuously building community resilience, especially through economic development. Am I correct?
Yeah, you are. If you look at the research, if you look around the world, really, that sounds a bit grand, but there are numerous examples of successful protected areas where community is a positive factor in that. If you involve the community, then the protection is greater because they have a vested interest in protecting the area. We have places in Malaysia where there are, you know, community management efforts. And these are positive examples we can use that we should be doing more of. But, you know, it's not something that is easily accepted by government agencies. It's enshrined in policy. The National Policy on Biodiversity talks about community-based management and participatory management. Various international treaties, the CBD Convention on Biological Diversity, the National Tourism Plan. Mm-hmm. All of these things talk about shared management. We're just not very good at it yet. Okay. Little pockets, but we need to strengthen that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like the communities, local communities aren't keen, right? Obviously, they want to protect, you know, where they're getting their livelihoods from, where they live. So obviously, there's some sort of disconnect there, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting. We started working on this in Tiemann back in 2014, 2015. And one of the first things we learned was that the locals want to be involved, but they can't be because there are institutional challenges to that. Mm-hmm. That's why we set up the Tiemann Marine Conservation Group so that they could work alongside of the authorities, but, you know, putting jobs and putting money into the local community. And that program's growing all the time and it's gaining support. We're doing some work at the moment on the other islands off the east coast, and we're asking similar questions in both Perhentian and Redang. And people are saying, yeah, we'd like to be involved in management, but we can't. So again, banging the drum, keeping on pushing and promoting and discussing the idea, and we'd like to see more participation from local communities. Get local people involved, strengthen the resilience of the communities and of the reefs, and we have a chance to make sure that our reefs are in the same condition in 10 years as they are now.
All right. I'm speaking today to Julian Hyde. He's the general manager of Reef Check Malaysia. Reef Check Malaysia is, of course, the local chapter of the world's largest international coral reef monitoring program. And we're talking about what Reef Check has been up to this past year. But after this quick break, we're going to come back and find out about some proposed plans for a new airport in Pulau Redang and the impact that that might have on the local community. So stay tuned. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today is Julian Hyde. He's the general manager of Reef Check Malaysia. Reef Check Malaysia is the local chapter of the world's largest international coral reef monitoring program. And we're catching up with Julian about what the organization has been up to this past year. And now we're back to talk about some news, I think, that Reef Check Malaysia learnt about. You were very dismayed, I understand, to learn of more plans for airport extensions on islands. This is at the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia, specifically in Redang Island. Tell me what you know.
It was in the media 2-3 weeks ago. One forgets the timescales with the movement restrictions, but recently There was coverage of a proposed new airport or an extended airport. There is already an airport on Redang, let's be clear about that. But it's relatively short landing strip. It's for small airplanes, and that's fine. But there is now talk about extending it to international standards, which will require extensive land reclamation. It will require additional buildings. And, you know, we're heading in the same direction as the airport on Tiananmen. Is this really necessary? Just on the mainland nearby, there's already an airport in Kuala Terengganu. Do we need another one on the island of Redang, which is probably about a 10-minute flight away? So once again, you know, we're talking physical impacts, by, you know, what's the impact on the biodiversity around the islands? But more importantly, what's the impact on the communities? You know, what's the impact on our biodiversity in a general sense? Is this really going to benefit the islanders? How many real jobs is it going to create? And in a changing world where COVID is driving changes to tourism, is this the right way to be going? Do we want to be still chasing after the mass market in tourism, or do we want to be looking at niche tourism and more nature-based tourism, as a number of countries are doing? So it brings just a lot of questions, not just about the physical damage to the reefs around Redang, but about where we're heading in terms of our sustainability in general and sustainability in tourism.
And, you know, you also touched on infrastructure, right? I mean, what is the infrastructure like on Redang? You know, can it actually cope with, you know, and I'm guessing, you know, this extension plans, right, is to bring in more tourists, right? I mean, that would be the rationale. Can the island actually cope with, you know, such an increase, especially, you know, as we're living in these COVID times?
Well, Redang's a pretty small island, and about the only road is the one that connects the airport through to the resort area. It's not very long. There is no municipal waste management on the island. I don't think there is yet an integrated sewage treatment system for the island. So one would question whether or not these basic civic infrastructures are in place to be able to manage a huge growth in tourists. The island gets between 130,000 and 150,000 visitors a year, something like that. And if it's anything the same as Tiananmen, they're talking about maybe a 5 or 10-fold increase in visitors. Well, I'm sure that there aren't the rooms on the island now to cater for that number of people. So, okay, how many more resorts are we going to build? Where are we going to build them? What infrastructure do we have to put in place? Yeah. How much damage is that going to do to the terrestrial and marine ecosystems around the island? Are we potentially destroying the very things that we're bringing people to see? You know, it's that argument again. Redang is a beautiful island. It has some great diving. It's got some of the best reef areas on the East Coast. It's got very good water quality. It's also got intact jungles on the island. It's got intact rainforest. And we want to cut all those trees down to build some more resorts to have more tourists come along who are going to go snorkeling and diving and do further damage to the reefs. That doesn't spell sustainability to me.
No, not at all. And I mean, we've seen it happen across the world, isn't it? You know, islands where there was just too much tourism, over tourism, and the islands actually had to shut down just to let the ecosystems actually recharge and, you know, rebuild themselves again.
Yes, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, I think everybody's forgotten that just 2 years ago, we were talking about Maya Bay in Thailand being closed down.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the Philippines closing down diving destinations because there was just too much development and not enough infrastructure. People were getting sick from sewage pollution in Boracay, for example. How quickly we forget. And now let's go back to what we were talking about earlier on. Yes, of course we need to get the tourism industry kickstarted. It's a huge employer. But while we've got this hiatus, maybe a question, you know, was that the right way to be doing things? And what is the trajectory of our islands? Is Redang heading in the same direction as the Thai islands, some of the Thai islands, for example, Koh Samui, where, you know, there was international development, and now there are no shallow water ecosystems left around the island. They've all been damaged, and that's from research done by people at Thai universities. Is that where we want Redang to go? If it is, fine, but let's go there knowingly and having asked ourselves the questions about, you know, how damaging tourism can be, whether or not it creates real economic value for the communities, Sure, it creates jobs for resort for people to work in resorts, but are they locals? Where is the investment coming from? Where are the returns going to? Is there really benefit for local communities? Let's do some social impact studies and find out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, right? Because I remember almost exactly a year ago, we were talking about almost the same thing. And this was happening on Tioman Island, right? And ReefCheck, of course, you released a paper actually studying how it could actually be a sustainable tourism destination. Am I right? Can you just remind us about that paper and, you know, how it links to what we're talking about today with regard to what might happen to Redang?
So Tioman's a bit bigger than, somewhat bigger than Redang, and it has a slightly bigger tourism market, something like 250,000 visitors a year. Now, at the moment, there's a population of 4,000 people on the island in seven villages. During the dry season, they have water shortages. During the busy season, they have power shortages. The incinerator can't handle the amount of trash produced at peak load. The power generation system is starting to get old and is starting to suffer in the remoter villages. And they want to build an airport and increase tourism numbers from 250,000 to 1,000,000. There is pretty much full employment on the island. And when the island is busy, there are no rooms. So where are we going to put these extra 750,000 people? Where's the power going to come from? How are we going to deal with their waste and their sewage? Electric, do I need to continue? There are limiting factors on the island which don't seem to be part of the argument for, oh, let's bring some more tourists. And if nothing else, like I said, the island has pretty much full employment. So all of these jobs that are being created are not for the islanders. Let's be honest with ourselves about that. So we're bringing more people onto the islands. Oh, so we need to build more housing, and there's going to be more sewage pollution, and there's going to be more trash. And I'm not talking about the tourists. I'm just talking about the resort operators. Plus, places like Tioman and Mantanani, and I dare say Redang, have been largely COVID-free. And the local populations are understandably, right, do we want mass tourism? I mean, you know, what's it going to bring with it? Yeah. So, you know, are we asking ourselves these questions? Are we looking at this carefully and doing a thorough review and saying, okay, this is the way we want to go. This is the sort of tourism that we want. This is how we're going to work with the local communities to make sure that their needs are taken care of. And I just fear that with the rush to development, we're not, and particularly with the rush to reopen the tourism industry, we'll be overlooking some things.
Yeah, and let's not forget that, you know, threats like climate change and, you know, the loss of biodiversity, those are still very real and very present dangers that we seem to have forgotten as well, you know, in that rush to you know, reopen economies and to kickstart tourism again. And projects such as this, that's, again, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's not going to protect what tourists are actually heading there for, the beautiful biodiversity, the reefs, the, you know, the gorgeous natural heritage of the area.
Yes, lest we forget in the last 12 months since the world has been in stasis, the climate has kept on changing.
Yeah,
you're quite right. These do remain major challenges. And once again, yes, it's tough for people. Yes, it's tough for the tourism sector, and the government's having to make some very tough decisions. But, you know, we need somebody to be taking a longer term, more strategic view, to be saying, okay, yes, we will reopen tourism when we can, but we are going to be looking at a more sustainable form of tourism. Let's have smaller people with higher value, you know, for example. How do we get there? So we know there's a new national ecotourism plan, and I know that some of the provisions in there are unpopular given restrictions on the industry at the moment. You know, you're talking about smaller volumes. Well, okay, but let's look at improving our game. Yeah. We're working in Mersing right now on a sustainable tourism program. And the YDP, the Majlis Daerah Mersing, is behind what we're doing, very supportive. In fact, they're driving it because there is a recognition amongst the Majlis and also some of the tourism players. Very importantly, some of the tourism players are saying, hang on a minute, the tourism out of Mersing is growing very rapidly, or was doing pre-COVID, sorry. But Mersing had become a very popular gateway to the islands, and people were starting to question, hey, is this sustainable? So, you know, there are people on the ground, there are people out in the community and among the tourism operators who are starting to ask these questions, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
But it needs to be done on a national scale.
Okay, and we're not seeing that, right? Any other updates, though, on the Redang Island, the potential development there, or that's kind of where we are at right now?
It's where we're at right now. There was the initial coverage in the media, mm-hmm. and there was a survey done by Plan Malaysia. I think it was Plan Malaysia talking about, you know, what are people's opinions on this. I haven't heard the results of that study, so I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Let's review these projects from the perspective of what is the total economic value here and what is the total economic cost? Because if we do more damage in ecosystem services costs than the value of the project, then we're bad accountants, if nothing else.
And we've been proving that for years. But anyway, I'm afraid we're running out of time, Julian. But, you know, you are going to... Okay, yes, we are entering a major lockdown tomorrow, but you are going to continue your work. Is there any way that the public can support you in the things that you are doing?
Well, we have the volunteer program, but we're not operating that at the moment because of the difficulties and the risks of travel.
Of course.
But go have a look at the news. Go follow up on the stories and start talking with friends and influencers and saying... Just asking the question of your MPs, of your ADUN, of people that you know, and say, you know, these issues of sustainability are very important. They're things that we need to be more aware of. This is how people can help. Don't worry about coming and helping us physically. We've got plenty of people to do the surveys and stuff like that. But what we need is a more educated and more supportive populace, people who are asking these questions and saying, what are we doing about climate change in the long term? Because, you know, beaches are starting to get eroded and we're having to spend money on beach defenses and fish populations are going down. So our food security is at risk. These are quite important questions, really.
You would think, yes. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Julian Hyde. He is the general manager of ReefCheck Malaysia. And we were talking about what ReefCheck has been up to, you know, this past year. And also, you know, why some new plans to extend an airport over in Pulau Redang might not be the best idea. And if you want to keep updated with ReefCheck's work, just head to their website, reefcheck.org.my. Or you can follow them on any of the social media channels. They're on Facebook, they're on Instagram, Twitter, and also on LinkedIn. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. All right. So just follow them on their social media channels to stay updated. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app or just head to bfm.my/earth. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.